kissed you, so I'll miss you. On the road I'll be wanting you, but I have you cause I love you, and you have me cause you love me too.
What's up, America? This is DJ Liberty on Penguin Radio, the one and only radio.dominican.edu on my show, Political Row. Today, we will be discussing a lot of international politics, mostly, actually, all of international politics having to do with the situation in Ukraine and Russia's intervention there and President Obama's response and the White House's response, and then other people's response to what the White House and Obama are doing. And then we'll be discussing some other things nationally, just some stuff around the United States of America and the state of California. So, to start it off, for those of you that don't know, there has been a serious issue going on in Ukraine, and Russia has used military force and stepped in and is being seen as taking over Ukraine and taking their sovereignty from the people that live in Ukraine. President Barack Obama didn't speak very long at the White House on Friday, but his message was clear that Russia should not use any military force to change the fate of Ukraine. Obama said the United States will stand with the international community in affirming that there will be costs for any military intervention in Ukraine. The president made his remarks as events moved quickly in Ukraine, with troops believed to be from Russia moving into Crimea, the southern section of Ukraine that favors close ties with neighboring Russia. Other parts of Ukraine and the new government leaders want to align with Europe. We are now deeply concerned by reports of military movements taken by the Russian Federation inside of Ukraine, Obama said. Russia has a historic relationship with Ukraine, including cultural and economic ties, and a military facility in Crimea, but any violation of Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity would be deeply destabilizing, which is not in the interest of Ukraine, Russia, or Europe. It would represent a profound interference in matters that must be determined by the Ukrainian police, said Obama. He said Ukraine must be autonomous. Just before Obama spoke, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, called for an urgent international mediation mission to Crimea. Also, a bipartisan group of 12 senators from the Foreign Relations Committee expressed support for U.S. assistance in Ukraine and warned of Russian intervention. We do not seek confrontation with President Putin and his government, but simply to ensure that Russia abides by its commitments and adheres to core principles of international law. A peaceful, democratic, stable, and sovereign Ukraine is in our national interest, the senators wrote in a letter to Obama. Vice President Joe Biden spoke with Ukrainian Prime Minister on Friday to reaffirm the United States' strong support for the new government and our commitment to the sovereignty, territorial integrity, and democratic future of Ukraine, a statement from the Vice President's office. The State Department warned U.S. citizens Friday night to avoid non-essential travel to Ukraine, particularly to the Crimean Peninsula, where it has been increasingly unstable. So, this brings on more news how Russia stands firm, but despite comments about them intervening in Ukraine, there are threats of sanctions. Russia showed no signs of backing down Monday, even as world leaders threatened sanctions and sternly rebuked the country for sending troops into Ukraine. At an emergency UN Security Council meeting to discuss the unfolding crisis, Ukraine's cry for help, you could say, saying that Russia had used planes, boats, and helicopters to flood the Ukrainian peninsula of Crimea with 16,000 troops in the past week, has caused a lot of damage and instability. So far, Ukrainian armed forces have exercised restraint and refrained from active resistance to the aggression, but they're in full operational readiness, the Ukrainian ambassador said. As diplomats at the meeting asked Russia to withdraw its troops and called for mediation to end the crisis, the Russian ambassador insisted his country's aims were preserving democracy, protecting millions of Russians in Ukraine, and stopping radical extremists. He said Ukraine's elected leader has asked Russia to send troops. The Russian envoy read a letter from the Ukrainian prime minister, and it remains Ukraine's elected leader who wants to find the peace and the stability, and Russia is stating that his action was done so by asking Russia to step in. People are being persecuted for language and political reasons, the letter said. So in this regard, I would call on the president of Russia, Mr. Putin, asking him to use the armed forces of the Russian Federation to establish legitimacy, peace, law and order, stability, and defending the people of Ukraine. U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power said Russia's claims about the situation in Ukraine are untrue and warned that sending military forces could be devastating. Russian military action is not a human rights protection mission, Power said. It is a violation of international law. Earlier Monday, today, global stocks slipped on fears of things could get worse, and diplomats grasped for a way to stop the situation from escalating. British Foreign Secretary William Hague called the situation Europe's most serious crisis of the still young 21st century. And, of course, President Barack Obama said the United States is examining a series of economic and diplomatic steps to isolate Russia, and he called on Congress to work with his administration on an economic assistance package for Ukraine. Now in Crimea, the tensions are mounting. More Russian troops are arriving day by day, hour by hour, surrounding military posts and other facilities and taking effective control of the peninsula from Ukrainian authorities. What they plan to do next remained unclear. Putin's moves in Ukraine come as the Russian leader struggles to deal with a political crisis in the neighboring country that didn't unfold as his government hoped. According to Russia analyst Jill Daughtry, the situations for Russia have been staggered and have caused Putin a lot of problems as he is reigning as president of Russia. Despite the assurances, stocks fell around the world, with Russian stocks leading the way as investors parsed the day's developments. Markets declined in Asia, Europe, and the United States, where the benchmark Dow Jones fell 153 points Monday. State Department spokeswoman Jen Psaki said Monday that sanctions against Russia weren't just possible, but likely. Ukraine's shaky new government has mobilized troops and called up military reservists. In Kiev, the interim prime minister has accused Moscow of declaring war, vowed that his west-leaning government would not give up the region. Nobody will give Crimea away. There are no grounds for the use of force against civilians and Ukrainians, and for the entry of Russian military contingent, he said. Russia never had any grounds and never will. So this now poses, you know, the struggle even here in the United States, how you can see that it's affecting stocks around the world even as well. I mean, it's causing a huge problem, and this is calling a lot of attention to Barack Obama and his administration in this midterm year for elections, of how they can deal with this situation in Ukraine. And like I talked about last week, Obama has been, well, Americans think that Obama is not all that respected around the world, and this could be a huge, huge deal for Obama to show that he is respected and can get things done, or that he isn't respected, and this is going to be a huge problem, not only for Ukraine and Russia, but for the entire world. Now, I mean, you can think of it how you want. Russia has basically declared war on Ukraine. Ukrainian leaders accused Russia of declaring war, and Russia's prime minister warned Sunday that blood could be spilled and growing instability could rise in Ukraine. Kiev mobilized troops and called up military reservists in a rapidly escalating crisis that has raised fears of this conflict, and world leaders pushed for a diplomatic solution. This problem in Kiev and in the Crimean Peninsula has caused many, many troubles around the world. Now, in an editor's note by Aaron David Miller, he wrote that the Ukrainian sovereignty won't be the only casualty of Russian President Vladimir Putin's efforts to assert Russian influence and interest in Crimea. It's still too far and too early to collaborate how this crisis will play out and what its consequences will be, but it's a fair bet that whether it ends in a Putin victory, defeat, or draw, it's going to make a difficult situation in the Middle East even more complicated. Whether Putin wins or loses in Ukraine, the odds that Russia could be a reliable partner for the U.S. have decreased dramatically. And this only reinforces the painfully obvious: when it comes to the core issues facing the U.S. in the Middle East, the U.S. must focus on outcomes, not solutions, and be very sober about what it might do to contribute to them. As go Putin's fortunes, so go those of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. However, the crisis turns out, with one possible exception, the Syrian regime is likely to benefit. And that exception is the highly unlikely contingency that Putin is so weakened from a botched policy in Ukraine or an uncharacteristically bold response from the United States and the West that he is permanently damaged and diminished or removed from power, which is not likely. The possibility that events in Ukraine will leave Putin victorious will only buck up al-Assad further and demonstrate that Russian street cred is rising. After all, in September, Putin masterfully intervened and used diplomacy to stay a U.S. military response against al-Assad's use of chemical weapons against civilians. Now, Putin appears to be standing up to the international community and ready to use force to protect Russia's interests in Ukraine. He's clearly not prepared to do that for Syria. But victories for Russia, particularly in the face of the West's empty rhetoric and red lines, can only reinforce al-Assad's conviction that he's betting on the right ally. Ukraine obviously has had to mobilize troops against this crisis from what Russia has done to them. A Putin win, maintaining significant Russian influence in Ukraine that clearly undermines Ukraine's sovereignty, will leave Russia stronger and more dependable as a partner and ally in the eyes of Al-Assad and probably Iran. Although Iran is not nearly as dependent on Moscow as Al-Assad is, the supreme leader looks at the crisis and sees Russian resolve in the face of a feeble West. The hardliners in Tehran will draw their own conclusions about their margin for maneuver in maintaining nuclear weapons aspirations. Russia has never been as allergic as America to the possibility that Iran will become a nuclear threshold weapon state. Iran will cut its own deal with America on the nuclear issue if it gets the right terms, regardless of what Putin thinks. But given the long odds against a comprehensive accord, should diplomacy fail, Tehran will likely be able to count on Russia to block punitive action in the UN Security Council and discourage the use of U.S. military force. A Putin defeat in Ukraine won't help matters in the Middle East much either, unless the crisis somehow delivers a knockout blow to Putin. A chastened Putin would probably be even more ornery and reluctant and problematic about cooperating with the international community on Middle Eastern issues. Beyond this, should Russia manage to have its way in Ukraine, smaller powers will take notice, particularly those nations whose interests can be at odds with the West and the U.S. Russia is not a small power, but it is standing up to America and the West, and for the true smaller powers, how big reacts when faced with a challenge from small can be instructive. And the Syrians, Iranians, and North Koreans will pay attention to the West's resolve. Can't be a good thing if Russia acts in Ukraine without cost and consequence. Israel isn't a friend of Russia nor an adversary of the U.S., but the Israelis have already seen what U.S. words mean when it comes to their own determination to continue to settlement policy. And to U.S. threats to U.S. military force in Syria or even against Iran, and they have concluded that words mean very little. The Saudis have reached many of the same conclusions about the Obama administration's willingness to say what it means and, more important, act upon what it says. Now we're going to take a quick short break here, but when we come back, we will be discussing even more about the situation in Ukraine. You're listening to DJ Liberty on Political Row on the one and only radio.dominican.edu.
Maybe you're tired and broken. Your tongue is twisted with words half spoken and thoughts unhealed. What do you want me to do for you to see? Of rain will ease the pain and love can see you through. Just a box of rain, wind and water. Believe it if you need it. If you don't, just pass it on.
Time to be gone and a short time to be there.
Hello, everybody. This is DJ Liberty back here on my show, Political Row, on the one and only radio.dominican.edu. Now, my first segment and continuing on into this segment, we'll be talking about the affairs that are going on in Ukraine right now and Russia's intervention and the U.S. intervention and how people are reacting to what's going on around the world. So, as I mentioned just before we took a short break, people have seen that what Obama's administration says and what they mean to do never really actually happens. They don't keep to their word, things like that. On that note, Obama has warned Russia against intervention and says there will be costs. Now, with these tensions dramatically mounted in Ukraine's Crimea region, the United Nations warned Russia against any further violation of its territorial borders, a warning that came as a result of the U.S. urging Russia to pull back from the region or face possible consequences. We are now deeply concerned by reports of military movements taken by the Russian Federation inside Ukraine, U.S. President Barack Obama said in a televised event from the White House. It would be a clear violation of Russia's commitment to respect the independence and sovereignty and borders of Ukraine and of international laws. Obama said any violation of Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity would be deeply destabilizing, and he warned the United States will stand with the international community in affirming that there will be costs for any military intervention in Ukraine. The remarks that were the latest in a series of fast-moving developments that saw Ukrainian officials grappling with rising successing Russian intervention. They have taken the airspace and the communications of Ukraine at two different airports. Ukraine accused Russian Black Sea forces of trying to seize two airports in Crimea, but said Ukrainian security forces prevented them from taking control. However, they are still looming and still trying to take over what is Ukraine's, you know, right to have. It's theirs. It's their country. And now Russia has stepped in and has said that they are not going to involve themselves as a military force, but have soldiers on the ground and have, as you've seen, attempted to take two airports in Crimea. Ukraine Interior Minister Arsen Avakov earlier characterized the presence at the airport of unidentified armed men who wore uniforms without insignia and as an armed invasion. The crisis echoed throughout the world, with the UN Security Council president holding a private meeting about the crisis enveloping Ukraine and world leaders calling armed groups not to attempt to challenge Ukrainian sovereignty. This group, is making a serious mistake. At a press conference outside the UN Security Council, Ukraine's ambassador to the UN said that the country was prepared to defend itself and urged the UN's moral and political support for the Kiev government, particularly in Crimea. Since last week's ouster of President Yanukovych, Ukraine has faced a deepening schism, with those in the West generally supporting the interim government and its European Union tilt, while many in the East preferring a Ukraine where Russia casts a long shadow. Nowhere is that feeling more intense than in Crimea. The last big boost to the opposition to the new political leadership, and Ukraine suspects Russia of fomenting tension in the autonomous region that might escalate into a bid for separation by its Russian majority. Russia's ambassador to the UN compared the reports of Russian troops taking charge of positions on the ground to rumors that are always not true. Even so, U.S. military commanders and intelligence agencies were scrambling since Friday to determine what was needed to get a better picture of Russian movements. That included an assessment of intelligence gathering, surveillance and reconciliation recording, things like that. And the U.S. State Department warned Americans to defer all non-essential travel to Ukraine, particularly to the Crimea region, obviously, due to the potential for instability following the departure of the former president and the establishment of a new government. Obama is considering not attending the G8 summit in Sochi, Russia in June if Russian troops remain in the Ukraine, a senior administration official familiar with the discussions told reporters. But officials spoke on conditions, and it seems that the Russian intervention in Ukraine has raised huge concerns not only in the U.S. but around the world. Kerry has gone and talked to Ukraine, or to the Russian foreign minister. The Russian foreign ministry said maneuvers of armed vehicles from the Russian Black Sea fleet in Crimea were needed for security and were in the line with bilateral agreements. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said he spoke with the Russian foreign ministry minister Sergei Lavrov on Friday morning about the airport and military activities, and Lavrov told Kerry that the Russians are not engaging in any violation of the sovereignty of Ukraine. Russia has a military base agreement with the country. Lavrov told him the military exercises were pre-scheduled and unrelated to the events in Ukraine, Kerry said. Kerry said Lavrov also had reaffirmed to him a commitment that Russia would respect the territorial integrity of Ukraine. Now, Russia's response was kind of in a denial of them not acting upon trying to take the sovereignty of Ukraine. And a telephone call with European leaders, Russian President Vladimir Putin stressed the importance of avoiding a further escalation of violence in Ukraine, the Kremlin said in a prepared statement on Friday. Now, Putin has also called for a normalization of the situation, speaking with German Chancellor Angela Merkel, British Prime Minister David Cameron, and European Council President Herman Van Rompuy, according to the Kremlin. Crimea has handed to Ukraine by the Soviet Union in 1954. Just over half of its population is ethnic Russian, while about a quarter are Ukrainians, and a little more than 10% are Crimean Tatars, a predominantly Muslim group oppressed under former Soviet leader Joseph Stalin. Meanwhile, Russian lawmakers introduced two bills Friday to simplify the new territories in Russian Federation and simplify access to Russian citizenship for Ukrainians, the state news agency told reporters. One bill also stipulates that the accession of a part of a foreign state to Russia should be taken through a referendum, according to Russian state news agency. Ukraine's president in Russia is making his first public appearance since his ouster Saturday. Ukrainian president said the newly appointed interim government was not legitimate and did not represent the majority of Ukraine's 45 million citizens. He wants charges connected to the deaths of demonstrators who were protesting his decision to scrap a European Union trade deal in favor of one with Russia. Now, Joe Biden has taken to media and urges Russia to pull forces back from Ukraine. Today, Vice President Joe Biden urged Russia to pull its forces out of Ukraine on a phone call with Russian Prime Minister, and the Vice President urged Russia to pull back its forces, support the immediate deployment of international monitors to Ukraine, and begin a meaningful political dialogue with the Ukrainian government. Now, the Russian presence in Ukraine is viewed as an invasion, and now Russia has invaded Ukraine's airspace. Today, Russian fighter jets twice violated Ukraine's airspace over the Black Sea during the night. Interfax News Agency quoted the Defense Ministry as saying on Monday. It said Ukraine's Air Force had scrambled a Su-27 Sukhoi interceptor aircraft and prevented any provocative actions but gave no further details. Now, the pressure rising against Obama trying to work and trying to reign in Russia has caused big questions, not only just in our nation and in Russia and in Ukraine, but just around the world. Now, Russia has dispatched more forces and tightened its grip on the Crimean Peninsula since Sunday and continues to do so up and through today. President Obama embarked on a strategy intended to isolate Moscow and prevent it from seizing more Ukrainian territory, even as he was pressured at home to respond more forcefully. Working the telephone from the Oval Office, Mr. Obama rallied allies, agreed to send Secretary of State John Kerry to Kiev, and approved a series of diplomatic and economic moves intended to make it hurt, as one administration official put it. But the president found himself besieged by advice to take more assertive action. Create a democratic noose around Putin's Russia, urged Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina. Revisit the missile defense shield, suggested Senator Marco Rubio, Republican of Florida. Cancel Sochi, argued Representative Mike Rogers, the Michigan Republican who leads the Intelligence Committee, referring to the Group of Eight summit meeting to be hosted by President Vladimir Putin. Kick him out of the G8 altogether, said Senator Richard J. Durbin of Illinois, the Democratic whip. The Russian occupation of Crimea has challenged Mr. Obama, as has no other international crisis, and at its heart, the advice seemed to pose the same question. Is Mr. Obama tough enough to take on the former KGB colonel in the Kremlin? It is no easy task. Chancellor Angela Merkel of Germany told Mr. Obama by telephone on Sunday that after speaking with Mr. Putin, she was not sure he was in touch with reality. People briefed him on the call. In another world, she said. That makes for a crisis significantly different from others on Mr. Obama's watch. On Syria, Iran, Libya, Egypt, the political factions in Washington have been as torn as the president over the proper balance of firmness and flexibility. But as old nuclear-armed adversary returns to Cold War form, the consequences seem greater, the challenges more daunting, and the voices more unified. Mr. Obama came to office with little foreign policy experience and has been repeatedly tested by a new world in which the main threats are Islamic extremism and civil war. While increasing drone strikes and initially building up forces in Afghanistan, he has made it his mission to pull out of two long wars and keep out of any new ones. But the limits of his influence have been driven home in recent weeks, with Syria pressing its war against rebels and Afghanistan, refusing to sign an agreement allowing residual American forces. Now, the Crimea crisis has presented Mr. Obama with an elemental threat reminiscent of the one that confronted his predecessors for four decades, a geopolitical struggle in the middle of Europe. First, the pro-Russian government in Kiev, now deposed, defied his warnings not to shoot protesters, and now Mr. Putin has ignored his admonitions to stay out of Ukraine. Caught off guard, Mr. Obama is left to play catch-up, with thousands of reinforcements arriving Sunday to join what America officials estimated were 6,000 Russian troops. Mr. Putin effectively severed the peninsula with its largely Russian-speaking population from the rest of Ukraine. No significant political leaders in Washington urged a military response, but many wanted Mr. Obama to go further than he has so far. Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee, the top Republican on the Foreign Relations Committee, has already devised language to serve as the basis for possible bipartisan legislation outlining a forceful response, including sanctions against Russia and economic support for Ukraine. The president has spoken out against Mr. Putin's actions and termed them a breach of international law. In addition to Ms. Merkel, Mr. Obama spoke with his counterparts from Britain and Poland on Sunday and won agreement from all the G8 countries to suspend preparations for the Sochi meeting and find ways to shore up the economically fragile Ukrainian government. The administration also canceled a trade mission to Moscow and a Russian trip to Washington to discuss energy while vowing to also scrap a naval cooperation meeting with Russia. Now, the actions taken by Obama and his administration, just like anything else that Obama has done recently, have been highly critiqued by so many different people, people from both parties, and of course, like I told you guys how I talked about last week, people giving their opinions of what they think about Mr. Obama and the respect that is given to him all around the world. Now, we're going to take a quick short break here on Penguin Radio, but when we return, I will be giving some opinions and responses to the way Obama and his administrations and anybody around the world has reacted to what is going on in Ukraine, and then I will be giving some other state news and national news here in the United States. So we'll be right back. This is DJ Liberty on Political Row on the one and only radio.dominican.edu.
Nothing really moves me anymore. Hard to thrill. Nothing really moves me anymore. There is nothing you can show me that I haven't seen before. I got time to kill, keeping to myself inside this room. Time to kill, keeping to myself inside this room. Years of Fridays, and you give up trying to. nothing really moves me anymore. I'm hard to thrill. Nothing really moves me anymore. There ain't nothing you can show me that I haven't seen before.
What's up, everybody? This is DJ Liberty back here on my show, Political Row, on Penguin Radio. Now, we've been discussing this entire show about the Russian involvement in Ukraine and Ukraine's situation and how the United States is reacting and how people around the world, specifically the UN and world leaders, are responding to these situations. Now, the U.S. and the UK are skipping the G8 prep meetings in Sochi because of Russian intervention in Ukraine. However, the Ukraine crisis, viewed by Republicans, is a weak Obama policy which encouraged Russia to invade. President Obama's all talk and no action when it comes to matters of foreign policy, some Republican lawmakers said Sunday, and that reputation, they charged, offered a convenient springboard for Russian President Vladimir Putin's decision to use military force in Ukraine. Appearing Sunday on CNN's State of the Union, Senator Lindsey Graham, a Republican from South Carolina, suggested Mr. Obama's warning to Russia on Friday that there will be costs for any military intervention in Ukraine was legless, considering how restricted options are for the United States at this point. Stop going on television and trying to threaten thugs and dictators. It is not your strong suit, Graham advised the president. Every time the president goes on national television and threatens Putin or anyone like Putin, everybody's eyes roll, including mine. We have a weak and indecisive president that invites aggression, Graham said. Following Mr. Obama's press conference Friday, called specially to respond to the escalating situation in Ukraine, Putin over the weekend added some salt to the wound by spurning his plea, instead of seeking and receiving permission from his parliament to use military force to protect Russian citizens in Ukraine, for months the site of political instability. Troops have already stationed themselves in Crimea, a Black Sea peninsula that houses one of Moscow's naval bases. Ukraine, in response, called the move a declaration of war and is mobilizing its troops. Republican Mike Rogers from Michigan, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee on Fox News Sunday, agreed with Graham that there are not a lot of options on the table. That's in part, he said, because Russia is running circles around the United States. Putin is playing chess, and I think we are playing marbles, he said, and I don't think it's even close at all. I believe it's the naive position on the National Security Council and the president's advisors that if we keep giving things to Russia, they'll wake up and say, the United States is not that bad, Rogers continued. That is completely missing the motivations of why Russia does what Russia does. Asked specifically if he joins some of his colleagues in blaming the president's foreign policy record, Senator Marco Rubio, a Republican from Florida, told NBC's Meet the Press, I think our policy toward Russia under the administration deserves a heavy amount of criticism. But he added, I usually shy away from that in moments of crisis when it's important for the nation to speak with one voice. This is a good point by Rubio. I think no matter how the Obama administration goes about this, we all need to stay as a unified country and represent the United States of America as one voice, like Rubio put it. Rubio applauded Secretary of State John Kerry, who, while making his rounds on the Sunday talk shows, said U.S. allies are prepared to go to the hilt in order to isolate Russia with respect to this invasion. Kerry warned Russia of possible economic sanctions and embarrassment on the world stage after Putin argued for the sovereignty rights of states like Syria and Iran. He also said the United States were absolutely prepared to boycott the upcoming G8 summit in Sochi, Russia, a threat seconded by Rogers. And as I said before, the U.S. and the U.K. will be skipping out on the G8 meeting. And as you can see, Republicans blame all of this and all of Putin's actions in Ukraine to his poor policy, his poor foreign policy. And it's sounding like, you know, Rubio put it, it needs to be one voice, but it's sounding like there's a lot of people out there that disagree with what's going on. I mean, of course, the situation is terrible, but it sounds like a lot of people, and me, including me, disagree with what Obama and the administration continue to do with these kinds of situations. Now, moving on to some national news. The House GOP budget will focus on reforming welfare and overhauling social programs. As a direct counter to President Obama's recent emphasis on the gap between rich and poor, the upcoming House Republican budget will focus on welfare reform and recommend a sweeping overhaul of social programs, including Head Start and Medicaid. The push, led by Republican Paul Ryan, returns the GOP's attention to a policy front that animated the party in the 1990s and signals Republicans' desire to expand their pitch to voters ahead of this year's midterm elections. This new effort comes after the party spent months fixated on combating the federal health care law and engaged in intra-party squabbles over fiscal strategy. Today, Ryan, the House Budget Committee chairman, published an often stinging 204-page critique of the federal government's anti-poverty policies, questioning the efficacy of dozens of initiatives and underscoring where Republicans say consolidation or spending reductions are needed. Ryan said the report is a prelude to the House GOP's budget, which will be unveiled later this month, and a preemptive rebuttal to the president's budget, which will be released tomorrow. Now, in other news, with the Olympics just ending, U.S. Olympians are returning back to their homeland, and one certain Olympian in particular has returned back to Alaska. His name is Ryan Stassel, a U.S. Olympic snowboarder, and he has turned to his attention to another high-stakes race, the 2014 Senate contest in Alaska. Stassel, who was 21 years old, said he worked as a fisherman to support his Olympic ambitions and wants better for the state that helped him achieve its dream. "I know Treadwell will fight to improve the state that allowed me to achieve my dreams. As an Alaskan, I know that Mead is a fellow Alaskan that truly encompasses the Alaskan spirit," Stassel said in a statement released by the Treadwell campaign. Now, Mead Treadmill has supported what Stassel has gone on to say, and Stassel, who was less than 2 points away from qualifying for the men's slopestyle finals, reportedly began his snowboarding career at Alaska's Hilltop Ski Area facilities since in kindergarten. Treadwell took to Twitter and said, "I'm very excited to have the support of Anchorage Olympian Ryan Stassel. Stop by HQ's tonight to meet him. #Axon. And now, on a more funny note, Obama and Biden have taken a quick jog through the White House. This quick jog was done in response to First Lady Michelle Obama and her Let's Move initiative. Now, if you want to see the video, there is actually a video of President Obama and Vice President Biden literally jogging through the White House. It's kind of funny and totally posed, but it's definitely a video that I would check out. And now for some quick state news. Felony allegations cost California Democrats their super majority. two California state senators in trouble with law enforcement officials are taking indefinite leaves of absence, rejecting Republican calls for their resignations, and, at least temporarily, costing Democrats their supermajority. Last week, Senate Democrats voted down a Republican resolution to expel State Senator Roderick Wright, a Democrat who was convicted of 8 felony counts of voter fraud and perjury on January 28th. Wright was first indicted in 2010 on charges that he lied on his voter registration form and candidate fillings and committed voter fraud in 5 elections. State Senator Ronald Calderon, a Democrat also, who has been indicted on federal corruption charges for allegedly accepting almost $100,000 in bribes, meals, and golf outings, including $88,000 in bribes from an undercover FBI agent last week, began a leave of absence to fight the charges. Federal agents raided Calderon's Sacramento offices last June. He has pleaded not guilty to 24 charges and released on bond. Both senators will receive taxpayer-funded paychecks during their absences. Democrats control 28 of the 40 seats in the state Senate and a supermajority large enough to pass their legislative priorities without input from the body's 11 Republicans. But the Wright and Calderon on leave, with Wright and Calderon on leave, the 26 Democratic votes aren't enough to overcome filibusters. And one last story here for you guys today. The California drought will affect people worldwide, Governor Jerry Brown says. The storm across California, starting on Friday, was a break but not a solution to an extreme drought. It may be the single biggest worry for Governor Jerry Brown. He said this is about the worst drought, no question. So this is a serious human challenge and an economic challenge for our farmers and for a number of small communities. The drought means that nature is real. The natural systems are now not supplying our water. We're going to have to adapt, and each year we'll take a look at it and act prudently. We'll invest in new technology. We're going to have to be very inventive, but if it continues, it is going to hurt the production of food and fiber from California. It'll affect people not just in California, not just in the United States, but even in the world. So this drought that has been going on now for a while is posing a threat not only to California, not only to our nation, but worldwide. So everybody, Governor Jerry Brown has called for everybody to be conscious of their water use and be conscious of the drought that we are currently in. Now, I'd like to thank you guys for joining me on my show, Political Row, on the one and only radio.dominican.edu. I will see you guys next week, Monday, 7 p.m., for another show. This is DJ Liberty on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Thank you.